With Mother's Day around the corner, are you thinking about a truly special gift for your mom or a maternal figure in your life? Let me tell you about MyLifeInABook.com. It's a unique service that turns your mom's life stories into a beautiful book. Pretty cool, right? Here's how it works. Every week, MyLifeInABook.com will send her a question via email. These can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions you want to ask. Then she can either type up her response or record her voice. And MyLifeInABook.com compiles all of her responses into a beautiful keepsake book. And guess what? They can even create an audiobook using her voice recordings. It's like preserving her voice and her stories for eternity. This book becomes a legacy, something you and future generations can treasure forever. Your mom's given you a lifetime of stories. This is your chance to give her a way to share them. I want to know about the stories of how my mom and dad grew up. What's the first thing they remember after they were born? That's one of the questions I sent to my dad after signing up for My Life in a Book. And I can't think of a greater gift to give my dad in sharing his stories and to receive. It's super easy to use. My favorite part of it, as someone who sometimes lives on turtle time and forgets about sending or receiving email, is that they reach out a couple days prior to sending questions, just so I know of what questions they're going to send to my dad, if I want to change it for another question or customize it with something that I want to know. It's that kind of specificity and care that I love so much. This is genuinely an incredible, incredible gift. There's no greater present than I could give a family member or a loved one than to participate in this kind of meaningful appreciation for the entirety of their lives, separate from my own. Check out MyLifeInABook.com and use code AndysGirls at checkout for 10% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom or loved one this Mother's Day. That's MyLifeInABook.com. with code AndysGirls for 10% off today. And thank the Jills Aaron and your life and mine.
I'd rather wear a sapphire than drink one.
I did not come prepared, so feel free to annihilate me.
Oh, is that the tag?
No, that's the tag. That's like, please come at me. Read me to filth, because I will just lay here and say nothing. I will say everything with you today, but a tagline I did not come prepared with, which is a real shame, because I just interviewed Quad from Married to Medicine, and I just filed the story, and in preparation for that, I was like trying to think of like a punny lead, so I watched this video on BravoTV.com's YouTube, and it was like Quad Webb's like guide to vocabulary, and it was just like a 9-minute compilation of every iconic thing she's ever uttered on the show, and it was like so amazing, and I felt like that should have given me the juice to come up with a tagline, yet I did not come prepared, and I'm embarrassed now.
Wait, but I thought that was your tag. I thought your tag, wait, say what you just said as a tag, because I thought it actually really worked. Oh. It took me aback.
I said, I did not come prepared, so feel free to annihilate me. So I would be like a season one and done housewife who hardly uttered a word, who would be just like eviscerated by a Kenya Moore or an Erica Jane.
Wait, it's a little bit of a callback. It is still work. It still works, I think, stylistically as a tagline. But it does. What was Vicky's first tag that everybody always drops into? What was it like?
I don't want to get old. Right? Wasn't that it? Or was that from a different season?
That's what it was.
When they would like actually take audio from the episode. I kind of miss that.
I mean, I do like the tags as a way to kind of like give a little bit of it's a wink to those of us at home. It's a little bit of a peek into what likely that either a reaction to somebody's storyline from a season past or a preview of what's in store for them this season. But I just do kind of like the idea of somebody just being like, la, la, la. Like,
no, that's like, me. That is the vibe today. La, la, la. Like I'm la, la, la-ing my way through the day.
Oh my God. Well, you guys, la la la. I'm here for this vibe and this return guest. It's Andy's Girls episode, I think 340. I actually really couldn't tell you, and God bless us all for that. And I'm so excited to have back senior TV reporter at Page6.com, co-host of the sparkly new podcast, Page Six's new pod, Virtual Reality, with friend of the pod, Danny Murphy. Welcome back to Andy's Girls, Evan Real. Evan, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you for such a glowing intro, and thanks for mentioning the new pod. We're really excited. We just launched it's been kind of like a video series for a little bit, but we just officially launched as a podcast. This is our second week. So the first week we had... Oh, no. Technically, this is our third week. We didn't have a guest on the first episode of the podcast. Then we had Ayan from Dubai. And then this week we had Dr. Jen from The Real Housewives of Orange County, who shared her thoughts on the return of Tamra and kind of, like, broke down how she got let go from the show and everything. So, yeah, I think next week we're trying... I think we might get Sarah from Dubai. Lots of Dubai girls are ready and willing to come on the pod, so that's fun.
I love that. And did Dr. Jen have thoughts on Tamra's return? What was
she
her
did.
Perspective?
Her perspective was like, good for her. Her life is all about housewives. So good on her, I guess.
Oh, that's a little bit of
shady, kind of shady for Dr. Jen. Shade. Yeah, totally. That was her thought on the matter. What do you think about Tamra's return? Are you excited? I mean, I am.
I am. I'm super excited. I think it was necessary. It's an appropriate time, and no better springboard than watching how Tamra has not like evolved, but watching how well she came across on Ultimate Girls Trip, yes. Which is obviously a different dynamic, but I feel like pauses work better regardless of whether or not they're like real or imagined. They work better for some people than others, and I feel a sense of I feel like a sense of humility maybe in Tamra that's come from being away from the screen for a couple seasons that I really appreciated with her. More of an interest to connect that I really liked. What do you think?
I totally agree with that. That's really interesting you say that, because I found her so likable on Girls Trip, and I was referring back to the Bible, aka Not All Diamonds and Rosé, and I was reading the Orange County part where the girls were talking about when Tamra was fired, and the way they talked about her, they called her, like, they said, like, the Wicked Witch is dead. They were all so joyous about her getting let go from the series, and I was like, wait, like, I forgot how kind of toxic Tamra had become on the show because of her venture on Girls Trip. So it just kind of proved to me that I think it did exactly what she probably wanted it to do. It was like a nice little reintroduction. I completely fell in love with her again. Watching her stand up to Dorinda, I was like, yes, girl, get it. Which I love Dorinda too, but... you know, that little moment in the kitchen, I was all about Tamra's side, because Dorinda was like placing food in their bedrooms. No one really talked about that. Like, she was so mad, but then she was like literally putting cupcakes in the rooms. Anyways, I'm excited for Tamra.
I'm excited for Tamra too. I'm excited for Tamra's press tour when OC really starts filming. I think it started filming, but she's on vacay, right? She talked about this on her pod.
Yeah, she's like with Carrie Duber in Mexico.
In Switzerland?
Oh, was it Switzerland? I thought it was Mexico.
Oh, wait, or maybe Mexico. I don't know. She's on vacation, and she was talking about the fact that they will be... there's going to be like a skeleton crew the first week shooting the new season, but it's happening, I think, now while she's on vacation or in the next couple days. So she's missing the next week or so, but because it's not the full production, they're essentially going to make it work, which I think is, I mean, you're not exactly going to be able to fully relax on your vacay, but I'm sure she's happy to be back.
I think that's actually going to work out really well for the show, because it'll be nice for like all the girls to kind of convene without Tamra and discuss like, oh my God, she's coming back. Like, she's coming around this crew again. And then she like, boom, enters, starts some shit. I just remember the last press tour when Gina and Emily specifically, they were just talking a lot about how excited they were to have a fresh start without Tamara and Vicky, and they were very vocal about reveling in the fact that Tamara was gone. So I just can't wait to see those three specifically reunite. I also can't wait to see Tamara stir some shit up with both Shannon and Heather. I feel like it's gonna be like a battle between Heather and Tamara, like who is gonna be that sort of central force, because mm-hmm. I feel like most Housewives shows do a pretty good job at making it like an ensemble situation, but Heather was clearly the star of last season. I felt like maybe that was an unspoken agreement as part of her return to the show. And I've been told that this season of Orange County coming up, the plan is to center it around Tamara.
And it appeared that Heather had quite a hefty position in terms of dictating what would be filmed and what wouldn't, especially the night of that like $39,000 on Nosh.
Yeah.
And I wonder, I mean, it feels like every season is kind of a recalibration for Housewives, depending on how they've been received or how they feel like they performed in the season past. I wonder for Heather how that shift is going to work, because, I mean, it did appear that she had a lot of power, and I wonder how she's reacting internally and externally to the idea that, like, not only might she not have that same power this upcoming season, but also there may be power from other people that's, like, used directly against her.
Totally, yeah. I imagine she's shaking in her boots, because Tamara and Vicky, they actually backed up Noella's claims that something did happen with the producer. Right. And when I hear Tamara talk about it, like, Tamara's been in this game for too long, and she knows that crew of producers so well. I really don't think she would lie about that. Like, I tend to believe Tamara about this whole situation. So, yeah, I think that Heather knows that Tamara's here to call her out. She's gonna shake things up, and she doesn't care if her, you know, any comment she makes has any sort of negative impact on Heather. Like, she doesn't give a shit.
Absolutely. And I think with Tamara, because it was apparently the producer who was directly involved who told Tamara, and according to Tamara, also told several other members of the cast, current and past, about what happened with Heather that night, that, like, I don't know how they'll handle it potentially in an edit, since it's so fourth wall focused, because it deals directly with hearing something from a member of production who's, I think, no longer working on the show. But for Heather, I would be completely fucking shitting my pants regardless, because it is a tell. What Tamara is saying is, like, I know what happened and I'm not afraid to say it, and I'm also not gonna save it for filming. I will have other stuff by then. Mm-hmm. This is like a preview. This is the amuse-bouche of the meal. It's not like a miniature version of the entree. It's just a little bit of an indication, a taste of what you're about to be served. If I was Heather Dubrow, I would be shitting a brick.
Yeah. I think she is. Like, I think bricks have been shit over the past few weeks inside that massive house of hers. In every single bathroom, a brick has been shit.
Every single one. Even ones that she hasn't even seen yet. Because right. That place, I always think of it as like a Ritz-Carlton in Aspen, where it's just so huge and so soulless with her shimmering wall. I've seen every episode of Heather's house tour, Heather's closet. It's so bad. It's so it's like this sad cave of, I don't know, isolation. Right. It's just a lot of space. It's just a lot of moneyed space.
I know. Wasn't there like one episode where Heather and Terry were like they're both working from home, but like they could see each other, but it was like two different desks from like literally 500 feet away, and I was just like, this isn't like how it's supposed to be. Like, I don't it's uncomfortable a little bit how big it is.
She did, I think, an entire episode, guys, you could fact check me, I think I'm wrong, but it's something along the lines of like her garage, maybe, or her basement, and she was touching the walls and being like, do you see how they shimmer? And all that I see, Heather, is gray. I just see shades of gray. I'm not, the shimmer is not coming across. It just lets me know that I can never afford to stay there, and please remind me when I have to check out.
Oh my God, yeah, totally. I mean, okay, so back to Tamara, though. I'm curious to know what you think about Tamara coming back and Vicky not coming back. Do you think Vicky deserves to be back? Do you like seeing her with Tamara?
I like seeing her on their spirited and sometimes awkward episodes of Watch What Happens, because I think that those have just grown like more iconic with time. Uh-huh. But I don't know that being the OG means you deserve to come back. I don't think that's how, in this sense, television production works, in terms of she was on the first season of Orange County, which necessitates a return, especially when they're trying to shift into new stories. I think Tamara is more of a creative and realistic shapeshifter than Vicky is. And we've seen with Vicky, it's like if something is going on in her life, she just shuts down. She's not able to move story forward unless you want the story to be about her standing very, very still. I don't know that I think it's twofold. Like, do I think that it would make sense for plot this upcoming season? No. And also, if it's a reset or that's what OC is working on, I don't know how that works with Vicky. And also, I don't know that you can just deserve your way back because of the nickname that you deserve to have. But I don't know that casting is really anointing in that way.
Right. Yeah, no, I agree with that. And you're so right. She does shut down when too much is going on. And we don't need our housewives to shut down. We need them to open up and divulge.
Yeah, and, like, there is something magical, I'm not going to lie, about, like, Vicky laying in bed. I mean, she's funny. And, like, her being, like, I know it's not funny, but her just saying, like, I'm so sad. And then bring just the ways that she sometimes communicates, she does have the ability to deliver a line, and I do think that she has grown in some ways, but I also think, I don't know that she's where future stories of Orange County are at this point. Like, let's see what happens this season. Maybe it'll make more sense for her to come back as a friend of,
right,
of Tamara's next season.
And honestly, I know she was so pissed about the friend of situation a few years ago, but, like, the friend of situation is not bad. I mean, I don't know how it works financially, but being a friend of, you get to still be out there, still be, like, part of the housewife situation. You can promote your brands. You can do whatever. You can be part of all the Bravo events, etc. But you don't really have to dig too deep into your personal life. You don't have to share too much with the audience. I don't know. I've talked to a lot of friends of over the years, and they always point that out. They're like, it's really not a bad gig at all.
Yeah, and if you're, I totally agree, and if you're afraid of being potentially forgotten in the mix, as a friend of, I think that you do get to determine how much shit you want to stir. Like, look at Marisol on Miami. I thought she had a spectacular friends of season, and I also think, like, she just got back from Girls Trip.
Right.
She's a friend of on Girls Trip. You can still be celebrated for being a housewife, even when you technically no longer are one.
Right.
If you really kill it as a friend of.
Totally, totally. Yeah, I think that the friend of situation is so underrated. I mean, yeah, Marisol is, like, the perfect example of that. I do think she deserves to be full time. But actually, Marisol was one of the people that I've talked to about this. She was like, I get to just go have fun with Alexia, and I don't have to dig into my marriage. Which, like, yeah, that's awesome. And you're right. She delivered, and now she's went to Thailand and is going to be on Girls Trip. And I've heard, I'm not completely positive, but I've heard that Marisol and Adriana are both still friends of this season, which is very shocking to me, because no one puts in the work like Adriana.
And yet, I think that works for Adriana, too.
You do? Okay, okay. Marisol, I feel like, is content being a friend of, but I feel like Adriana, I mean, she sings the theme song, and I think that, like, if I sing the theme song, I would feel a certain way, too. I'd be like, give me my fucking mojito.
Well, she may well want it, but I think it works better
as a friend of.
I think small doses go a long way, especially when there's a lot of other storylines happening. I think that you can still get ample screen time in a way that, like in Miami, because it was a real official reboot and because we knew her life so many years ago, and there were kind of questions around like the validity of the, I really want to get married. Oh wait, but it turns out we were like technically married for many years and didn't tell anybody. But how does that affect, you know, everything with her now ex-husband? I just think that like a little bit of a reset and being and not being responsible for carrying a personal storyline is helpful, where your storyline is really like your personality and group and individual dynamics. I think that works well for people with big personalities and people who are more a little drier with delivery, like Marisol. You know?
Right. No, that's actually a good point too. Like the big personalities are capable of being a formidable friend of when you like if you're yes. if you're a Tracy, you're gonna be forgotten. But if you're an Adriana or a Marisol as a friend of, you're gonna do well, because I mean Adriana, like she was in every episode, and she also didn't really have to dig too deep into her personal life on this past season of Miami. It was really just her offering these sort of like explosive dramatic reactions to other people's shit, which worked out, and then her talking about Kanye's pee-pee.
Oh yeah, yeah. But I I think in that case that like it worked, it played to her best qualities when it comes to delivering on Housewives, and it didn't hold her responsible for areas that were maybe less easy for her to discuss on camera or to deal with or to push back from. Maybe she's in a different position with whatever relationship she's in and, you know, however she's doing. And this just made more sense to her, which does to me, like the combination of like the Miami friends and like the Vicky, I must come back, I must come back, I must come back. And I will maybe be a friend of. I mean, who knows what, even what Vicky's thinking. But it does bring to mind sort of conversation even that Tamra has discussed in the press, yada, yada of it all. Things that Dorinda has said very recently about Jill's positioning of how she'd like to return. Because she has said repeatedly she wants to be a friend. And I think that there are people who like want to be friends and then people who want to be housewives, but they think it would be more successful to market themselves as a friend. Where do you think that Jill fits in that spectrum?
I think that Jill is an amazing housewife and she should be back on Legacy and the show. Like, it just, it can't, we can't do it without her. She has to be back. But with that said, I think she is, like everyone has mentioned, very incredibly thirsty. Her thirst needs to be quenched very, very hard. And I think that she wants desperately back to be back on the show. But I think by positioning herself as like, I don't know, I think a friend of is better. I think that's her way of trying to make herself seem less thirsty. Like, my little story, and I don't know if I've told you this before, but when I was moderating two panels, their producer panels at BravoCon the first year it happened.
Iconic producer panels, you guys. I know I talked about it when Evan was, but you got it. You had to be in the room where it happened. Absolutely magical moment. Sorry to interrupt.
No, thank you. Thank you. And I might have shared this story the last time I was on here, but Heather McDonald and Jill Zarin were with me backstage, and there was that portion where the fans could ask questions, and the fans can ask whatever they want, but there was also a set of questions that, like, I had already worked on with Bravo, and they were both just, like, badgering me, like, ask the producers if they think Jill should come back to the show or why they haven't asked Jill back to the show. And then I didn't ask it because I didn't want to throw any, you know, curveballs at Bravo. I didn't want to, you know, shake it up too much. But Heather McDonald participated in the fan portion of the like question Q&A at the end, and she was like, why don't you bring Jill Zarin back? And then everyone realized that she was standing next to Jill Zarin. Everyone realized that Jill Zarin was in the room, and everyone was like freaking out over Jill Zarin, and it was like very awkward. And the New York producer, I'm going blank on his name right now, but he did not really offer
Darren,
such a nice guy and very handsome.
Very handsome.
He
shout out to Darren.
Shout out Darren. He did not really offer a clear answer, and I felt bad for everyone involved in the moment, but look at us here in 2022 working on a Roni Legacy reboot. Who would have ever thought? And I truly think Jill's coming back. I think Cynthia Bailey kind of even like almost mm-hmm. let it slip a little bit on Watch What Happens Live the other mm-hmm. night, and Andy was like, he's like, let me deal with my Jeff Lewis mm-hmm. drama instead, because I do not want to say anything about Roni Legacy.
Yeah, funny you should mention that moment. That was something that I discussed with friend of the pod Tracy Morrissey in real time,
because
she's phenomenal. We were both in the audience for that panel, and during, first off, just sidebar, I had been told by someone that housewives were like not necessarily encouraged to attend panels as attendees for reasons probably similar to this, where it becomes more of a potential event and there is a control factor. And I, as an event producer, 100% understood that perspective, which we got to see play out in this panel. Tracy and I are sitting like front row-ish or whatever. The Q&A for the fan questions happen. We see Heather and Line, and we both had the same response, which we talked about on the BravoCon episode that followed, you know, in November, December of 2019, which was essentially, it's a fan event. If you are a content creator asking a question on behalf of an attendee who wants to come back on the show, why are you taking up the time of fans who don't have the platform to ask a question? Unless you want to ask a fan question. But if you're doing it as a friend or an ambassador of a person, why are you taking up that time? And we had a reaction. Tracy and I were both like, what is even happening? This is a fan event. This is she has an incredibly successful, fantastic, popular podcast. She could ask any number of these producers at any time. And Jill's in the audience. It felt like such an odd moment. So then it was sort of like a battle between people in the audience of like, let Heather ask her question. Let Heather ask her. And the question is like, can Jill come back? Which I thought was weird. Tracy and I talked about it on the podcast. Then I went on vacation to Mexico, and I talked about this on Andy's Girls. So if you are new in the last couple years to AG, this is probably new information, and I truly hope not to get in any trouble from this, but I did talk about it on a subsequent pod. But I got a DM from Heather very shortly after that episode went up that said, hey, I'd love to have you on Juicy Scoop. Are you around the area? And I was like on vacay in San Miguel de Allende, like living my best life. Thought, oh, that's so interesting. Like Heather reached out shortly after this episode went up, in which we talked about that panel moment. I responded back in the DMs on Twitter and said, yes, it would be, I would be happy to come on. I live in New York. And then an hour or so later, she responded back and said, hey, I just heard that you said some stuff that was like a little critical of me, like women should really support other women. I don't know that she knew that she was quoting Ramona, but I thought that was a wonderful moment. And I respond, because I was like, no, this can't be how it's done. Give yourself a business day before you say, I am, here's an example of me supporting you that I'm going to rescind. And I responded back and said, I was so sorry to hear that, but I appreciated her last couple hours of support and hope she would have a great rest of your day. And I just, it was like one of those examples of like, am I, not a little bit of like a selling sunset, am I the drama, but like, it felt like a little bit of an offshoot of a Bravo moment that was happening because of this moment that you're now telling me they were angling to do before the panel, which doesn't seem surprising because that's exactly how it came off, and an example of one of Jill's most endearing and self-sabotaging qualities, which is this kind of thirst. And I say this in New York City, a city that she truly owns, a landmark property for the Jill Zarin industry. I would love to see her back, but it's also like a, this is what Tamara's talking about.
Totally. And I will say that I also find her thirst very endearing, and as much as I didn't want to ask the question on stage, I did appreciate Jill and Heather even approaching me backstage and trying. Like, I thought that was, like, sweet. And they couldn't have been nicer. Like, they were both incredibly nice
to
me.
So nice.
I will
super,
say
super
that.
Nice. Genuinely. Yeah.
I will say that, you know, Heather follows me on Instagram. So, Heather, if you're...
We love a follow. This is not a bad talking moment. This is
no,
a straight talking moment.
She's always... Yeah. So sweet in the DMs, very, very mm-hmm. kind, very interactive with the Page Six content. So she is wonderful. I have nothing bad to say about Miss Heather McDonald or Jill Zarin. I appreciate Jill's thirst, and I appreciate Heather's
friendship.
Loyalty to her friends. I thought, you know, if I'm not gonna ask, at least she did. You know what I mean? Like, she wanted an answer that day. She could have asked on her own podcast. She could have done it in a different way, but Jill was there. The producers were right there. I mean, seize the moment, I guess.
I mean, that is also, like, that's also the interesting dynamic when you become friends with Bravo Labs and taking this outside of Heather, totally. But there is that dynamic that happens between content creators, podcasters, housewives, where it's like, how do you know
what you can get away with? Like, I always think about...
Not like, yeah, what you can get away... Is it what you can get away with?
Well, like, what you can say without damaging a relationship. Melissa Gorga, she made a comment about Dylan Hafer and the Betches podcast, and she was like, I don't care when you talk shit about me. I think it's funny. And, like, I love that. Like, love Melissa Gorga. Love her approach to everything. Like, she just has, like... So, like, I guess it depends on the person, too. Like, with the Melissa Gorga, she can obviously take a joke. But, you know, some of these Bravo celebrities cannot take a joke.
And that's part of what makes them such excellent Bravo Labs. Like, true. That level of, like, complete sensitivity, which is... a human attribute, and also something that can get very garbled and not only misunderstood but so heightened when you're dealing with the plots on Housewives where people are questioning literally everything from your intentions to your personal relationships to your marriage to your work to your money, your wealth, your health, whatever it is. I would assume make someone feel very sensitive about how that is being discussed or covered, but it just gets magnified in an interesting way when it comes to, like, interpersonal dynamics, which I think we'll see play out at the next BravoCon, you know?
Yeah.
IRL is tough, online is tough, but that's what kind of makes these events so spectacular, because they are so rare, and you get to see, I always use this word, is it id? Like, which part of your, is it ego, super ego, whatever, is just like, you know, that's when there's no editor there to protect you or amplify you or give you a little context. That's just the, she's sitting in the audience, she wants to come back, so her friend's gonna ask, you know?
Right. It's just simple as that.
Simple as that.
Conversations around wellness and weight loss can be complicated. There's the Instagram filter we all see on IG and social media, and then IRL. And between $20 smoothies and daily ice baths, everyone is doing the most to hack the health system. But there's a better way. Row. Row provides access to the most popular weight loss shots on the market. Over 200,000 people have already chosen Row to help them lose weight. And you can sign up from the comfort of your own home. No scheduling a doctor's appointment, commute to the doctor's office, and no waiting rooms. The Row Body Program pairs a weekly shot with healthy lifestyle changes, so you can lose 15 to 20% of your weight in a year on average and actually keep it off. Of course, medication must be paired with diet and exercise modifications in order to achieve any stated results. Medication cost is not included in the program. patients must pay for medication separately. With Row, average weight loss is 15 to 20% in 1 year with healthy lifestyle changes. BMI and other eligibility criteria apply. Go to row.co/andysgirls. You can sign up today and you'll pay just $99 for your first month and $145 a month after that. Medication costs are separate. That's ro.co/andysgirls. Sign up today. Spoiler alert, I watch a lot of Bravo, and when I'm not watching Bravo, I'm sitting in the cloth having a moment of spiritual growth, and when that's not happening, I'm living here in New York where there is a lot to do and not a lot of time to do it. The last thing that I want to be thinking about, let alone worrying about, is my hair. Now, I have wavy hair naturally. It also has color processing, which is surprising because I am a spiritual blonde. And as a result, I don't want to have to worry about frizz. That's why I love Way's anti-frizz cream. It works for my hair texture. It works for having wavy hair. It smells great. There are notes of bergamot, Italian lemon. You guys know I just went to Italy. It was for moments like this, violet and more. Having used a lot of products in my hair in the past, I don't like a heavy feeling, especially when you have wavy hair. That's incredibly important, which is why I love the anti-frizz cream. It makes my hair look like me just a little bit better. Way's new anti-frizz cream provides immediate frizz control that lasts up to 72 hours. It helps reduce and repair split ends. And according to a consumer perception study, 90% of participants agreed that their hair looks less frizzy. And I would like to know what that consumer perception study has to say about some original cast members of The Real Housewives of New York. You'll be way obsessed with Way's bestsellers. They're leave-in conditioner, detox shampoo, hair oil, gloss, and so much more. Frizz-free up your schedule with Way. Go to theouai.com and enter promo code Andy for 15% off any product. That's theouai.com, promo code Andy. C'est bon.
I do want to pivot a little bit to something potentially a little bit more complicated.
Okay. All right. Let's go.
Let's do it. Let's deep dive. Which was this episode of Beverly Hills this season so far? What are your thoughts on what's going on in those diamond pastures over there in Beverly Hills?
There's a lot going on. First of all, I still can't get over Erika Jayne wailing her way through Usher's Christmas Carol.
Oh my god. That was, I watched it 4 times.
Really? Oh my god, I'm so bad at watching people sing. Like, I don't know what it is. Like, obviously, like Britney's and Beyonce's aside, like when people are just like earnestly singing, like it happens on The Bachelor and The Bachelorette sometimes. Like some dude just did it on the most recent episode of The Bachelorette. Yes, I'm watching, I don't know why, but whenever someone sings, whether like semi-talented or not, when they just like give like an impromptu performance, I am like cringing into the tiniest ball that I can. And I was doing that during this, and then I would have cringed at an Usher solo, but then when Erica added her voice to the mix, I like
off key.
Literally, yes, off key, I wanted to just disappear. But other than that, Erica is also, you know, god, poor Erica. Like, what I mean, actually not poor Erica, poor Erica's alleged victims and on camera victims, such as,
right,
you know, Crystal. We were talking earlier, I can't get over the laxatives and the you can't eat this chicken finger 1-2 punch. Like, that was just so wild to me. And I hope that Crystal's all right. Like, I don't know if they're gonna keep airing this sort of like, what's the word? Not
inappropriate, unsafe, yeah,
careless. Yes, dangerous.
Careless.
Yes.
Careless.
All of the above. All of those adjectives work. It's because there's so many other people out there like Crystal who have experienced similar things. And then, so I don't know if they hear a drunken tip from Erica that laxatives do the same job. Like, you know, you never know what could happen or how someone could how it could just like sit with someone. Like I mean, this is not the same, but like, I just remember when I was like 11 or 12, I was an avid reader of J14, and there was a one page little feature about weight loss tips for prom. I was 11, not going to prom anytime soon. But I was also like an overweight kid, desperately trying not to be overweight. And it was this like this picture of like pretty Christina Aguilera in like a bikini top or like a belly shirt or something. And her number one weight loss tip for prom was to not eat salt because it bloats you. And so like literally, like I like don't add salt to anything, and it has like stuck with me since I was 11. And that's something silly, and it's fine, and my sodium levels are probably down because of it. But like that, like just that little silly J14 article, like is a part of my DNA now. Like imagine what, I don't know, Erica's comment about laxatives and chicken fingers could do to someone.
First off, I just want to say, feel free to process that it is your life, but like that doesn't feel like a nothing moment. That feels like that could be incredibly harmful to someone reading. So like for you to still think of that experience is to me completely understandable.
Oh,
and
well, thank
how
you.
Terrible that you had to see that as an 11-year-old and feel that way. I just think that's what a disservice was that was done to you.
I know, my lifelong fear of salt. I mean, I blame it more on J14 than Christina Aguilera. I love Christina. I've been to many a concert.
Right. I mean, I don't think Christina Aguilera created the disordered eating complex right. that exists. Not to say that staying away from salt is an example of that, but the idea that right. that thin is the goal is, it's an unfortunate part of our culture. And to watch that get acted out with such joie de vivre by Erica repeatedly and by production is unfortunate. They ended last week with a to be continued around Erica making light of a woman's very serious and open struggle with an eating disorder, and then began the episode that way with that moment, which started the episode with a thud, because you're sensationalizing to me an incredibly unfortunate occurrence, and then what they're doing is ending these fucking episodes, not including any counters regardless of whether or not they happen, but ending these fucking episodes with the like, if you need to seek treatment, here's the contact, which is of course important information, but not as important to me as using the platform that you have as a network to at any point allow for a pushback. Like, the producers love a fucking confessional. It makes Kyle look like she understands that belittling and being belligerent to a child is not good, because even though she, you know, casts it aside as like an innocuous moment, she has her confessional to talk about how not great it was, and same with Dorit. And like, to not have a confessional at any point for this stuff, not even a confessional, to add this isn't great is such a missed opportunity, and it's borderline irresponsible in a way that makes me really upset, I have to say.
Yeah, no, totally. And like, I do wonder if Erica was asked to provide some sort of response in a confessional and they just haven't,
like, that's a good
you
point.
Know, maybe it got left on the cutting room floor somehow. I don't know, but like either way, they should have had her say something or included what she did potentially say about it, because yeah, it's not great. I mean, she is like drunk when she's saying these things, which is not mm-hmm. an excuse, but it kind of like, you know, maybe she wouldn't have been so careless had she been in a sober state of mind, we would hope, at least. I don't know.
Yeah, the women, though, at the event seemed relatively sober, and yet we don't see them cutting in. And also, they could have had a delightful little confessional just sharing, even right. if they weren't in the room, because that hasn't stopped them from responding to things and driving the story forward. It just feels like production didn't want that. They didn't want the story to be driven forward in that moment. They wanted it to be continued to get the biggest possible gasp out of saying that and just moving on. The only confessional that I can think of that happened that felt like a little bit of a counter was Garcelle saying you cannot essentially advise someone to take laxatives when you know they have an eating disorder. That is harmful. Taking laxatives can be considered a form of disordered eating. It can be it is a harmful, dangerous act that is often done to regulate a person's weight and for control. This is where we get into very dangerous territory because there's a little bit of an expectation here that the network is going to use their platform responsibly and not just add a little bit of a shrug emoji to the ends of some of these moments like they're doing.
And it's also weird to me with this issue specifically, because in the past I feel like they've covered this topic like pretty well. Like I feel like the discussions on previous seasons, you know, among Kyle and Lisa, and I think there might have been a few others talking about their past, you know, eating issues and how they overcame them, or, you know, why it was a struggle. Like, I felt like those stories were dealt with more delicately, and I hate that Crystal's isn't being treated the same way.
It's certainly not being treated seemingly respectfully by the rest of the cast, because while they seem to have empathy and sympathy for what she's going through, they counter that with, like, questions that are incredibly insensitive and potentially harmful and damaging to ask somebody who has an eating disorder, including quote unquote, like, tell me how you disorder your eating. Tell me, using language specifically, like, do you throw up? That is very serious and violating language, and it plays into, I think, a lot of misunderstanding and lack of education that these women have. And it's also a reminder that you can have an eating disorder and not understand someone else's eating disorder if you yourself haven't experienced it, which is why I was so confused as to some of Kyle's reactions to stuff, because she has talked about her experiences having an eating disorder, but she didn't have Crystal's experience. Right. And that feels like that's what's getting lost here. And it's just incredibly unfortunate, because it's just not, I don't think it's, I have questions about the edit around this stuff, and I'm nervous about how this is going to go for the rest of this season. I just hope that there is sensitivity that's shown, but I just don't know how realistic that is, judging by how the sensitivity that's shown by producers and production, because you don't have to include this stuff in episodes. What is the value of not only including the chicken joke, but using it as a framework to drag it out with it to be continued? What is the value that you are providing on an entertainment level, let alone safety?
Right, definitely irresponsible, but maybe it's an effort to cast Erica as a villain. I mean, Erica like already is kind of like in her villain era, but I don't know if like that was the approach.
Maybe it's to make her look bad, but then I don't know, because then we've got all this other stuff with Kyle doing the Lord's work to try to say that the harmful stuff Erica has done was either not harmful or not harmful enough to be considered anything more than fun. You should, for lack of a better term, I am not making a joke, this is not me making light of it in any way, but like what Kyle is saying is to like shut the fuck up. She doesn't want anything that Erica is doing to be seen as anything more than loosening up. What do you think of those that scene in particular, that scene and Kyle's confessional?
I think it's psychotic. I don't understand. I just don't get why she's defending Erica so hard, especially because, you know, as I think we're gonna discover later this season, that, you know, Erica came for her sister Kathy in some way. So it's like, why are you defending her so hard? Like, I think there's something that we're missing as viewers, like something about their friendship is, we're not getting the full picture, because there is really no reason for her to defend her so hard with this whole like drinking and mixing pills thing. Like, not, it's weird how it's always like, I've never seen Erica so fun and fancy free, but like also Erica is like, you know, seemingly doing something very unhealthy and potentially dangerous to herself. Like, you know, mm-hmm. one question that I've asked before is like, was Erica so bad prior that you are so relieved to have her on pills and pills and alcohol? Like, does that make her easier to deal with for you? I think for Kyle, like, Erica caused so much drama and tension last season, and because Kyle was friends with her, I think Kyle felt like she had to answer for Erica to the rest of the mm-hmm. cast. And I think that now with Erica being like fun, fancy free, drunk on medication, it's like she's so relieved that Erica is out of that very intense emotional state. And so maybe she's like less on edge about having to mediate a dinner war between Erica and Sutton. But then also her new fun, fancy free a pills and alcohol moment is creating other issues. Like, it, you know, like, I don't know. And maybe Kyle doesn't feel so tethered to the drama that this is creating, that like the drama of a defensive Tom Girardi jailed moment. I don't know. I don't even know if I'm making sense. I just think that, Kyle's done.
The TLDR is Kyle's cooked.
Yeah.
I mean, there is some, I do feel a little bit of tension from Kyle around this, not only in the way that she had her confessional at one point and said, like, essentially, Garcelle is trying to bait me into using the phrase alcoholic, and I'm not going to give that to her, mm-hmm. where she feels like she's the one potentially that could be thrown into the mix, and that is why she's defending Erica so hard, not only to defend Erica, but to also defend herself, comparisons to what happened with her sister Kim.
Oh, totally. There's like definitely some like residual trauma from that whole experience, mm-hmm. and so yeah, I think she's doing, like she said, anything in her power not to say the word alcoholic on camera, like, ever again. I don't think she will ever say that word in a public forum again in her life, because it caused so much pain for her previously. So now she's, like, really going hard, giving Erica the benefit of the doubt and not calling someone an alcoholic on camera, and, you know, all the drama that that created, I'm sure she wants to avoid. Whereas, like, Garcelle's like, alcoholism? Like, she will just...
She will, but she's also, Garcelle's like, what? Okay, let's not potentially put a quote-unquote label to it, but let's talk about the behavior.
Yeah, like, and question
Kyle
it.
Won't acknowledge... Right, Kyle's not going to
engage.
Label someone in her eyes or engage in accountability for behavior, which is where, if this is the whole, the threading of the needle is like the importance of a confessional, that's where I felt like Crystal's confessional was so important, which was to say Kyle's idea of friendship is absolute resolute silence, and also defense of a person's seemingly indefensible behavior, which is an interesting look for Kyle to say, I don't want to label someone because that becomes their identity or their identifier, but I also don't want to provide a space for accountability for reckless or poor behavior because that's also an identifier. So as a result, you can kind of do whatever, and we've just got to suffer the we meaning other people, because it hasn't directly affected me, have to suffer the consequences and understand that it wasn't that bad because this is fun. And also, she hasn't maybe been belligerent to a child before, so this time is okay. She hasn't done X, Y, and Z before, so this time is okay, as opposed to like zero times is the amount of times that should be considered okay. Anything above zero is not okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think that makes sense. And man, lucky for Erica, she's got people in her corner after all that she's been through. Rinna, Kyle, like the Dorit is very supportive mm-hmm. of her. So there must be something about EJ. I don't know.
Who do you think is the biggest liability, to use Erica's words, Sutton or Erica?
I think Erica. I do think Erica. Look, like I can appreciate Erica Jayne, but in present time, I would say she's the biggest liability. Like I follow her on Instagram, obviously, to stay updated. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times I won't like a picture because I don't want to co-sign the things she allegedly did. Do you know what I mean? Like I'm like me as someone who like has spoken to her for 15 minutes on Zoom. I don't know this woman. Like I am cautious about being associated with her, and that's like, you know, that's psychotic. I'm not part of Erica Jayne's life whatsoever. But even just, I don't know, as like a journalist who covers Housewives, like sometimes I am hesitant to even just engage into their social media. I don't know. So yeah, she's to me, she's a liability.
But that's what was so interesting, I thought, about the episode too, is that like she had that moment of breakdown with Kathy where she expressed shame about how much of a potential liability she's become and not wanting to hurt other people's reputations. And then at the end of the episode, she's saying to Garcelle, you know who the biggest liability is? It's Sutton.
Yeah, also that's a great Erica Jayne voice that you have.
I mean, it wasn't even intended to be a voice. I mean, but like, how do we, in the over the course of the same episode, and she is being incredibly serious at the end of that ep.
Right. No, I didn't even think about that, but like, that is literally her projecting.
Don't you think it is? Because she's talking about unpredictability, and I think that there's a difference between Sutton's clumsiness, which is what it, I think, is, and Erica's annihilation impulse.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Totally. Yeah. Yeah, I think she was drunkenly, like, kind of talking about herself.
I don't think she was that drunk. I don't think that cognac had gone as far as it, the other stuff went, whatever she had at that Christmas party.
Right.
That cognac tea.
Oh my god, I love how when she, when the chamomile tea wasn't available, she was just like, what kind of cognac do you have? Like, I mean, but also like relatable, like
yeah, 100% relatable. Can I ask you about one little moment that did not make any sense to me, and I want to know, because of such skill at covering all things celebrity and more, what your take was?
Yes.
The scene with PK and Dorit talking about potential DUI. He wasn't actually charged with DUI, but like the suspicion of DUI, that conversation taking place weeks after the event itself. How did that scene read to you?
It read like a pickup scene.
Yeah.
Like obviously it was filmed much after the fact.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like they needed to, because it was in the press, they needed to address it on the show somehow. And I feel like it was a request from production, if I had to guess. But I will mm-hmm. say that, you know, if it was a little bit more staged than, you know, the other scenes, and it was indeed a pickup scene set up by production, I will say that Dorit, who deserves all the Emmys after the Jamie Lee Curtis wind chime scene.
Oh my god, it's both hot and cold. It's, what is it? Keeps things warm and cool. What was it?
Yeah, it keeps things hot and cold.
Oh my god.
I think that this was another nearly Emmy worthy performance from Dorit. I mean, she really drilled it into him, like, bitch, you're not gonna lie to me. Don't you ever fucking lie to me. I thought it was, you know, even if it was just a pickup scene and it wasn't like just, you know, as authentic as we hope our reality shows are, I thought that Dorit did a really good job of selling it. And I love to see an empowered woman putting her husband in her place. So I'm here for it. lightly scripted or not, I say yes.
I thought the kind of, like, there was a vibe that was happening while they were talking where they kept saying, like, and isn't it so weird that now people find out weeks later, where I was like, are you accusing someone of leaking this? Like, what's the thread of tension underneath this? I didn't understand.
Yeah, that was there, and I would like more clarity about that because, yes, there was sort of, like, this very gentle insinuation.
Right.
That someone leaked it to the press. But I remember reading that when it came out, and I just remember thinking, like, damn, like, mm-hmm. these two cannot catch a break. I felt really bad that it happened so soon after the home invasion. Yeah. But it was a scene that I appreciated. Like I said, I love an empowered Dorit.
Speaking of appreciation and empowerment, I just want to shout out you and your friends at Page Six for what was a viral moment on social media early this week when Erica Jayne returned from a bazillion star vacay in Hawaii, I'm assuming underwritten by Diana, but I don't actually know, where she flew back from Hawaii and was met at LAX, you know, accompanied by her friend Rinna, with a process server serving her documents relating to litigation, continued fallout due to the everyday Tom. Every day that follows, more bad things come up. What was your reaction to getting that video, which was, I think, exclusively captured or covered by Page Six?
Yes, so we got the exclusive on that video, and that video was just wild. A, because I thought her airport look was not very cute. I don't think an all-white sweatsuit does anything for anybody. And I think she was upset that she was caught looking like how she was looking. I mean, Erica is a beautiful woman, and she has many a stunning item in her wardrobe. I'm just saying, you know, she's looked better than how she looked that day, and I think that might have contributed to the daggers. My fiance, he pointed out, like, he literally paused the video for me. There's this moment where, like,
yes.
she sees the cameraman, and mm-hmm. you can just, like, see, like, the flames of fury, like, mm-hmm. burn into his lens. Like, she is upset. And then I also found it really interesting when the woman is trying to serve her with the papers. She's, like, trying to, I mean, I don't, maybe she thought it was, like, a weird fan or something. Like, who knows? But it's, like, once
yeah.
she realized what it was, you could see her just, like, fuck, like, take it. And she's just.
Right.
The like, frustration of it all was very delicious.
The way that Rinna fucking ran when she yeah. was just like, I don't know what this is, but I don't want to protest,
right.
but then waited for Erica to catch up. And sidebar, I just want to say, listen, Erica is a piece of shit. I understand it. Got it. Capture it. Done and done. I actually enjoy the Erica at leisure wear moment that we are experiencing because she no longer does 24/7 glam. Because I'm like, this is some real shit. I understand. I got into an argument with a friend of mine when I was going to Europe pre-COVID, back when I did things, and they were like, you know, like, what are you wearing to the flight to Paris? And I was like, what, like, beaten down Spanx that aren't, that are like the TJ Maxx, you know, like the little, like the whatever, and no makeup, and a hoodie. And my friend's like, but you could meet someone on the plane. I'm like, I'm not fucking meeting anybody, and I am flying at like a whatever o'clock at night through the night to land the next day. I'm going to look bad because
yeah.
that is my airport attire. I don't wear makeup because I don't want, pores are mm-hmm. everything. Like, I don't want anything getting in the way of just survival and comfort.
Uh-huh.
So to see Erica in those moments, I'm like, we see each other. Like, I'm not doing any, I'm going to wear the most absurd, maybe looks like shit to other people, but I don't give a shit because it's
right.
my airport experience.
Well,
like,
totally. And let me just point out that I have no room to talk and no room to judge because when I'm on a flight, I am absolutely in my Target gym
like
shorts and
yes.
my, like, most crummy t-shirt I can yes. find and like a sweaty baseball hat and like the ugliest sneakers 100%. You can imagine. So I seriously have no room to talk. I just think that I think Erica in her like TJ Maxx era, I think that she is some, I feel like she wants to like pretend that she's owning it, but I don't think she's fully comfortable in it yet.
Definitely.
And I could tell she was not comfortable being spotted at the airport looking like that.
And I definitely don't think she was comfortable with any kind of expression of vulnerability that she did not feel in control of, which could be how I look. It could be the fact that I am being surprised after returning from a vacation, the fact that this is happening in a public place, the fact that I recognize that there's a camera,
right?
Which process servers often use to make sure that you can capture on camera someone being, I mean, like that is a part of it too. But obviously, page six, I'm running them in a little bit different. But I think that there are several areas of where her anger and frustration comes from. I just don't think we see it as purely. And to see Rinna just kind of like not wanting I know. To well, be involved.
Well, I mentioned that Rinna was so loyal to Erica earlier in this podcast. But now that we're talking about this, when things, I don't know, when shit hits the fan, it looks like Rinna could run.
Listen.
And her little Free back. City sweatpants.
You're coming back before the end of Beverly Hills, which, unfortunate spoiler alert, is maybe never going to happen. I think this season is going to last forever. That is our punishment as a culture. But you have to come back before the reunion, especially because, my goodness, is there a lot for us to continue to discuss. I'm so thankful for you hopping back on the people's couch, Zoom, Kiki, et cetera, whatnot. Can you tell people where to listen to your fabulous new podcast and what you've got cooking with upcoming guests, any interviews or articles that you're also working on for page6.com?
So you can catch me on social at Evan Real, and you can catch Virtual Reality, the new Page Six podcast, on Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcasts. And upcoming guests, we're still trying to book some guests for the podcast, but I just interviewed Phaedra Parks yesterday, and she was a hoot. She had a lot of fun tea to share. She definitely doesn't want to be back on Atlanta. She is absolutely positioning herself for a role on Dubai, so fingers crossed for that. And you know the man she said that she thought she was in love with on Girls Trip?
Yeah, the doctor?
She's let him go. She's single. She's not in love anymore. So That's a little tea from Phaedra.
Oh my god. Do you want Phaedra to go to Dubai?
Yes, I would. Yeah. I say go to Dubai, go shake things up. I think Phaedra in Dubai is interesting. I mean, we haven't really seen like a crossover like that yet amongst, like, you know, from one Housewives franchise to another. I think Caroline Stanbury from Ladies of London to Dubai is like the closest thing we've had. So
yeah, that's a great point.
I think Phaedra to Dubai, or maybe a Cynthia Bailey to Beverly Hills would be fun. I think I'm ready for it. We're almost 17 years in. Let's just do it. Let's see what happens.
I think it could happen. I really think it could happen. If full-time or a friend of, who knows, and the reunion's filming in New York City, I think today. Was it yesterday or today?
They're all there.
It's what a time to be alive in the something era. I don't know that it's golden, but it's something, it's, and I'm here for it.
Incubation era.
It is it's soft reboot era, and I'm here for it. Guys, join the Andy's Girls Patreon, number one way to support the podcast. I'm putting up a Satchel Spectacular this weekend. I got some incredible satchels of gold from you guys. Those are your thoughts and feels, questions and concerns, named in honor of Her Holiness Kelly Kaloran Ben-Simone from Scary Island, about all things Housewives. Slide into my DMs on Instagram at Dame Galley, or if you've got a long form satchel of gold, little thesis thesis, which I love to get, email andysgirlsshow@gmail.com with your satchels, and they can get featured on an upcoming Patreon episode. Also have an hour plus bonus app for the OG of the AG and People's Couch Tears on Patreon, featuring OG of the AG, Damian Bellino. And follow me on Instagram at Dame Galley. Some exciting stuff coming up in the next week. You're going to want to look to social for that. And Evan, thanks so much for coming back.
Oh my God, always the best time with you.
And we will chat with you soon. Bye-bye.